Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Anthony DiStefano, and he is out with a brand new book for children, The Grumpy Old Ox. That's a illustrated book, along with Richard Cotterie, the New York Times bestselling artist. And Anthony, you've seen him on EWTN, Fox News Channel, all those. He's written a lot of books for adults. This one is for children. And Anthony, what I love about this is the ox seems to be one of the forgotten animals at the birth of Christ in the storytelling. I remember it from the song What Child Is This, but I don't really think about it after that. And so picking the ox as your animal for this book, why was it such a perfect animal to tell this story?
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. He is the forgotten animal. Everyone always writes about donkeys and sheep and all the rest. And in fact, I myself have written a children's story about a donkey, an Easter story, which was a pretty big bestseller a few years ago. But yeah, right there in the book of Isaiah, believe it or not, early in the Bible, there's a quote that says, "The ox knows his master, the donkey knows its owner's manger, but my people do not understand." So that's the basis, the biblical basis for there being an ox there. But it makes sense that he'd be one of the stable animals. And I thought it would be wonderful to focus on him because an ox is big and kind of ugly looking, and I thought, wouldn't that be nice to write a children's story about someone grumpy for a change, you know, but someone who, you know, sort of undergoes some sort of a miracle, sort of like Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol, and goes from being a grumpy old, prideful, mean kind of a character to someone at the end who experiences kind of a miracle of grace. I just thought it would be an interesting way to teach children about the true meaning of Christmas and do it in an entertaining way.
Well, I thought it was interesting you chose the name Grumpy to describe the ox, because it's not like you said that he was a bad ox, or, you know, the same way Ebenezer Scrooge was not necessarily a bad person because he converted himself in over a nighttime. But, you know, the Grumpy seems to presuppose that somebody is ultimately good but just having a bad day, right?
Yeah, exactly, and I think children can relate to this too, because a lot of children are grumpy, you know, when they don't get their way, when they're a little bit spoiled, you know, they could throw temper tantrums. That doesn't mean they're bad children, and unfortunately it happens to adults too. As we get older, you know, there was a movie called Grumpy Old Men a while back. You know, we have a tendency to grow more cynical, have less hope, and like Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, he wasn't a bad man. He was really a wounded soul. You know, underneath all the gruff exterior, you know, he was kind and he was generous. It just had to come out. Something had to make it come out. And that's why the transformation at the end of The Christmas Carol was so heartwarming, and why I hope at the end of this book, when my grumpy old ox experiences a transformation, it will be heartwarming as well.
I always appreciate when authors who write predominantly books for adults write a children's book, because you're used to writing to a certain education level, and there are certain things in this book that I think only adults would probably understand. Some of the symbolism, there's something that prefigures the Eucharist in here. But when you take yourself out of your adult writing role and put it into children, is that a tough transition for you to make as a writer?
No, actually, you know, I've done a lot of reading in Hemingway, let's say, or some of the Russian writers like Tolstoy, who specialized in writing very simply, but at the same time, underneath, there were deep meanings. They wrote on the iceberg principle. You know, only a third of the iceberg is above the surface, but most of it's underneath the water. So I'm used to reading that kind of literature and loving it. And so when I write these children's books, I'm not really truly writing them just for children. I'm aware that these books are being read to children by their older siblings, by their aunts and uncles, by their fathers, by their mothers, by their grandparents. So, you know, not only do you not want to talk down to children, but you want to make sure that the people reading the books to these children will be able to get something out of the book too. That's my goal, that an adult reading the book to the child will say, "Wow, I didn't think of that. I didn't realize that. That gives them an insight too."
What I also like, and these books are so great, they're from Sophia Institute, and the text is done in the form of rhymes, and you can do children's books two ways. You can do it either so it rhymes or it doesn't. What is your thought as far as the keeping the attention of children? Is the rhyme important?
You know, if the rhyme is done well, then it can be wonderful and great. Then quickly, because it's memorable. Rhyming is memorable. I mean, I remember rhymes from when I was a little kid, you know, all the little nursery rhymes that you taught. Sometimes rhyming can be done very poorly, though. People who, you know, they think they could just rhyme the end of words, and it's good. You have to keep in mind the beat and the measure and the accents. If you have a good feel, a musical ear, and you're able to create rhymes that are memorable, then it's terrific, because then a child could keep that story with them forever. It'll always be with them. But I don't just write in rhyme. I write in prose, too, for children. It really depends on the story. I think if it's a simpler story, like this one is relatively simple, it's just the story of the birth of Christ, I think then you can get away with writing rhymes.
I'm chatting with Anthony DeStefano about his new book for children, The Grumpy Old Ox. It's available now wherever your books are sold. And Anthony, what I love about the story of the Nativity is that we hear the term manger, and I think that's literally the only time I've ever heard that word used to describe a bed of straw. And you could simply say a bed of straw, but there's something special about that word manger, isn't there?
Well, yes, actually, in Italian, the word is mangiare. For your Italian listeners, it means to eat. And a manger is actually where stable animals eat their food out of, eat their straw and eat their hay. So it means to eat. And it's very interesting, you mentioned about the Eucharist. The word Bethlehem in Hebrew means house of bread. So you have Jesus is born in a town called House of Bread, and he's laying in a manger where stable animals eat from. And I don't think it's any coincidence, because in the Bible, specifically the Gospel of John, Jesus is called the bread of life. And the whole theological meaning is there, that Jesus has come down to feed the hungry. You know, that we're hungry, we need something. We need something more than just this bread, materialistic bread that we're fed in the world today. We need something spiritual. And he's the bread of life, and he's come to restore sight to the blind and set free those who are captive to sin. That's the deep meaning of the Christian story in general. So I wanted to try to get that into this little Christmas story too, if I could, and I did that through the symbolism of the manger.
As people are shopping for this book to read to their children this Christmas season and all year long, you also recently wrote a book about atheism, and I have to ask about this because you identified something in there I'd never thought of. You talked about, I think the term was functional atheism. Functional atheists is that people who say that they are Christian but may as well be atheists. Can you explain what that term means?
Well, let's say you say you're a Christian, or you say, for that matter, you're a Jew, or you say that you're a Muslim. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be Christian. You say that you believe in something, but then your behavior doesn't reflect that belief. You know, your morality is the secular morality. You don't follow, say, the Ten Commandments. You don't act with charity towards your neighbors. You've adopted the whole behavior of the secular atheistic world around us. Well, in that case, it doesn't matter if you call yourself a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim. You are essentially a functional atheist. For all practical purposes, you're an atheist, and it really doesn't matter what you say you are. You know, if I could say all I want that I play for the Green Bay Packers, you know, I could even wear their jerseys. It doesn't matter. I'm not, you know. Or the New York Yankees, and that's exactly what you have people doing today. They're wearing the T-shirt that says Christian or Jew or Muslim, but underneath they're not. They're really, for all intents and purposes, an atheist, and that's okay. You want to say you want, you know, it's up to you what you believe, but it's sort of like false advertising. You know, it's false advertising, and it's a little hypocritical. And that's what one of the points I made in the book, Inside the Atheist Mind.
Is this a real palate cleanser for you to take yourself out of the things that you have to think about all day in your job as Catholic media and to write a book for children, to think about children and the innocence of them?
It is. In some ways it is, and in some ways it's not. I don't know what your listener demographic is, but, you know, I would say probably a fair amount of them are aware that, you know, there is a culture war right now in America. You could see how polarized the country is, one side or the other. And you don't want to get into that here, but the point is that, you know, the both sides essentially are trying to vie for the children. They're trying to get to the children at an early age, whether it's in the curriculum of the public schools or whether it's in the religious education. And so, yes, in a way, it's a palate cleanser for me, but also in a deeper way, it's part of my contribution to this culture war, trying to educate children with these traditional values before the secular society, tries to corrupt them with theirs, to be honest. So, I know some people, some of your listeners may not agree with that or may not be on the side I am. But so it's a palate cleanser, but at the same time, it's part and parcel of what I think my mission as a writer is.
Well, I can't tell you how much as an adult in my mid-40s I enjoyed this book. The book is The Grumpy Old Ox by Anthony DiStefano, and the illustrations are by Richard Cowdery. Anthony, just fantastic offering here, and thank you for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Love your show.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.